Let me ask you, what comes to mind when you think about the Old North Church in Boston? Most likely, it is a certain famous ride involving a lantern or two. Every Middlesex village and farm, that's the Commonwealth Chorale of Massachusetts singing The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere. They sang that in 2021. Now, that moment defines the church in our popular psyche, but there's a historian who is hoping to change that perspective, a researcher. Listen.
My focus is on the people who were not the elite white men who are typically celebrated in Old North's history. I read these men's stories with an eye toward the people who might not be named. The people who interacted with elite white male Old North parishioners also have stories to share.
And Jamie Crumley, who you heard there, is working to share them. Jamie is a research fellow at the Old North Church, and she's been working to find and elevate the stories of Black and Indigenous parishioners through the church's records. Those experiences and that research are part of a new online series that's called Illuminating the Unseen. And a part of our collective hidden history. Jamie is here in studio too. Jamie, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, okay, I want to start at the beginning, remembering back in your head to when you first started at the Old North Church. Here's a little bit of sound to help you with that.
During my first week as Old North's research fellow, I read the list of baptisms that were performed at the church from 1723 until April 11th, 1775. I was excited to study this list because I assumed that I would learn the names of some of the church's earliest members and their families. With these names, I could piece together some of the stories of people who were part of Old North in its earliest days. The work was not quite as straightforward as I had hoped.
Why not?
Oh my goodness. Going through these records, they're so fragmented in so many ways. A big gift that we have at the Old North Church is that our records have been carefully preserved. We have 300 years of history, and most of that history is remembered both within the church building, but also in our archival materials, which are carefully preserved and stored at the Massachusetts Historical Society here in Boston. However, even going through those records, it's difficult to learn even a lot about some of the white 18th century men and women who were part of the congregation because the stories are so fragmented. But then when it comes to the stories of Black and Indigenous peoples, we often just get a first name. Sometimes we even just get the name, just their race and that they are a child, or their race and that they are an adult. And so that's a struggle when we're going through and trying to recover names and recover lives when we have these really fragmented records.
You know, it makes me wonder when you set out. Okay, right. You're a researcher, which means you've probably got some kind of hypothesis, right, when you start.
Right.
How it started, how it's going. Tell me.
How it started. I'll say that my previous research before I started working for Old North Illuminated, which is the nonprofit that helps to preserve the history of the Old North Church in Boston, my dissertation research had covered Black abolitionists. And so I was really seeking out these stories of what I would describe, and I know other scholars have described, as Black social life, seeing places where Black people were resisting. That's not the story of the Old North Church. However, what is the story is that lots of Black people have been part of the church's story through being baptized at the church, through being married at the church, through receiving financial support or support to educate their children at the church. But they've also been so much of the church's story in terms of the ways that they found community with each other. So many free and enslaved Black people chose to attend the Old North Church, which is fascinating. Mm. And they formed community as they were sitting there together and forming bonds with each other And they also bonded with Native peoples who also attended the church. And that was really exciting to see the names of some Indigenous and mixed race, I'm presuming Afro-Indigenous women who were also part of the congregation and formed relationships with Black people who attended the church.
As I listen to you, there are several conversations we've had on the show before that are kind of all crashing together in my head, right? So we talked with Taya Miles about her book, All That She Carried, The Journey of Ashley Sack, where she really argued that as an academic, there were materials that usually you have to rely on that just weren't there.
Right.
Because enslaved people were not captured in documented history.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm thinking about Carrie Greenidge and her most recent book on the Grimke sisters and the role specifically of Black abolitionists in Boston. And then I'm thinking of a conversation we had last week on a new book on labor and work in New England in the Civil War.
Jones,
Right. And so Jacqueline Jones is here last week, and it turns out the place where the Black abolitionist action was really happening in the 1800s was 12th Baptist, not Old North.
Yeah.
So then I watch your videos, right? Mm-hmm. So all of this is kind of, and you talk about actually Old North Church really being, I mean, we glorify it. And and the church itself has been very self-searching.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to acknowledge that. They hired you to do this, right? But they collaborated with the British.
Mm-hmm.
They used missionary work to try to convert Native peoples.
Right.
I mean, they were kind of throwbacks to use today's lens.
Right.
And so that's not where I would have situated the Old North Church in the landscape I just laid out for you.
Right.
So talk more about that.
Yeah. I mean, I've loved all of those recent works that you've just named, and they're so important. And I think something that a lot of people who do, first of all, just doing Black history and doing Native history here in New England is challenging, in part because Joanne Pope Mellish has this excellent book, Disowning Slavery, where she talks about this intentional practice of the earliest New England historians of trying to disappear people of color, Native peoples and Black people, and create this narrative. Sure, we had slavery in Boston, but it was never really that bad. And I think part of the challenge is going through these intentionally submerged histories, right? Because, of course, here in New England, they wanted to present themselves as being so different from the South. They wanted to present themselves as a site of liberty and freedom. And yet there are so many contradictions there. And so what I think the historians that you just named and others do so well is really trying to piece together where can we find Black social life within these records that are so fragmented, and how do we tell stories when there's so many missing pieces.
And yet you illuminate so much. So I'm going to play a little sound of you back to you again from these videos, because, man, you learn a lot as you go through these. And this is from People of Color as Children and Elders in 18th and 19th century Boston. And it's about the dangers that Black and Indigenous children faced in colonial Boston, even after slavery was eliminated in the region.
Right.
Even after slavery was abolished in Massachusetts in 1783, free Black children remained at risk. If their parents could not afford to support them financially, or if they were abandoned and had no one to defend them from exploitation. On August 26, 1756, Old North Church member Alexander Chamberlain indentured James and Thomas, who belonged to a free Black family, the Humphreys, that worshiped at Old North. Both James and Thomas are described in the record without their last names and classified as, quote, Negro boy, end quote.
How should James and Thomas sit with us today?
Oh, wow. That's a difficult question. I think about this present moment where there's so much impossibility for Black children and for Native children, for children generally, regardless of race. When we think about all of the violence in our country, when we think about young people going to school and not knowing if they're going to make it home alive, which is tragic and difficult to sit with. And in so many ways, we're reliving some of the challenges of what it meant to be a child in early America, where living through childhood, surviving childhood was not guaranteed. And we know that if that's not guaranteed for children who come from white, middle, and upper class families, How can it be guaranteed for children who come from low-income families and from families that are people of color? And so as we try to remember those young boys and young Ruth Humphreys, their sister, who was indentured at the age of 6, they connect us so much to our present moment, and they remind us that that past of what happened in the 1700s is not so far away. We're still living with it in the present, and we have so much work to do to get to a place where childhood is actually a safe time in people's lives.
So that is a really robust answer. More, I think, than I expected, and it makes me want to know, what else did you see then that made you say, oh, I know you, because that's now?
In terms of the story of the children?
Any of the stories that you came across.
Oh, my goodness. I did my PhD at UCLA, and one thing that I always thought was so fascinating is when I would work with my students and we would learn about race and we would learn about gender and how these things are socially constructed. In other words, how humans have made meaning of race and gender. That's not evident, and that doesn't have to be that way. And it was so fascinating because being in Southern California is a place where there are, you know, there's this long history of racial mixing, even more so than we have on the East Coast. And so I'd have so many students who were biracial or multiracial, and hearing their stories about fitting in and belonging and seeing that in so much historical research, there's a problem that we've talked about Black people, we've talked about Native people, we've talked about white people, we've talked about Asian people. We haven't talked about how do these groups come together? How do we talk about people who come from multiple different identities and belong to multiple different groups? And as I've gone through these records, I've thought about a lot about my students who I taught, young 18 and 19-year-olds in Southern California, who were struggling in 2018, 2019. Where do I belong? What racial group do I belong to? And going through these records and seeing women like Beulah Speen, who's one of the women who I talk about in a video, who I now know after further research was either a Native woman who's misidentified as a mixed Black and white woman, or perhaps an Afro-Indigenous woman, and she married an enslaved Black man at Old North in 1767. And I thought, I've met this woman before. I met her in 2018, trying to figure out her identity, trying to figure out who she was, and just trying to form connections and be part of a community. And that's been exciting, but it's also been sad.
We're talking with Jamie Crumley, who's a research fellow at the Old North Church. And that was a striking moment, Beulah Speen. Because as you lay out your, you know, as you lay out your research, it is this, wait, was there a confusion? She clearly wasn't confused about her identity, but the historic record, was it confused about her identity? Was it deliberately misinterpretive or assigning of her identity? And then you take that Speen family all the way forward. You track it. This is Speen family as in Speen Street.
Yeah.
In Natick today.
Yeah.
Right. So literally we can even drive through our streets and see the echoes of what you were finding.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So then the last thing that I think I want to know in our last couple of minutes is, so you'll be done, I think, in June.
I will be done in June, yeah.
Was there something to the records, the material, and the history here that you're going to miss? Like I want to understand, can you do this kind of work somewhere else with another historic record? Are we just one of many places that you could explore these questions? Or is there something unique to our history, our documentation, the way we've preserved our buildings and our materials that is it's not special like fancy, but special like unique here?
Right. So here in New England, of course, we have lots of old churches. One thing that I think that's really unique about the Old North Church is, of course, we know now it's the oldest extant church building in Boston. Part of the glory of Old North is in the fact that it survived 300 years in that same place on Salem Street in the same building. And that's part of the glory of the church. And they've managed to preserve so many of their archival records and is still an active congregation, which makes it both exciting and fun to do the research, but also makes it challenging because there's a real living, breathing congregation that's also trying
to
live and grapple with this history. in what is now a very Italian neighborhood, and at the time, of course, was a largely English neighborhood. So there's been so many changes over the past 300 years at Old North. Of course, this work can be done elsewhere. I think the challenge is finding sufficient records. Not every congregation has managed to hold on to their records for this amount of time. Some, you know, as you read about all of these churches that were formed in the 17th century in Boston, and they just burned down. Multiple buildings burned down. Some of them were intentionally torn down by the British during the American Revolution. So Old North just has that gift of having all of these old records and having them really well preserved. One thing I will say, I know this segment is about hidden histories, and I've just been so impressed by the work that's being done around Boston at various universities, but also at various archival repositories. I think about the Hidden Histories Project that's happening at the Congregational Library in Boston, and about the good work that they're doing to try to digitize a lot of the church records, especially as some of, you know, unfortunately, we see a lot of churches starting to close. They just don't have the membership anymore. And it's important, I would just say, not only for churches, but for all old organizations, find a way to preserve and hold on to the history. Find safe places like archival repositories where those histories can be stored and maintained. And even for those of us in the present day, keep track of the work that we're doing. Write it down, preserve it, remember it, celebrate it. I think that's especially true for women and members of the LGBTQ community and people of color, that we preserve our stories.
All right. Jamie Crumley is a research fellow at the Old North Church, talking about a new series of videos and the research behind it, Illuminating the Unseen. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.